Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Broadcasting live from Fenway Park, this is The First Pitch with Bradford and Tomasi.
What a play by Pierce! And the Red Sox have won the division series.
Tonight, game two of the World Series is the Red Sox.
And the Red Sox have won the American League pennant for the 14th time.
And the Dodgers.
The Dodgers have won the pennant. Back to the World Series they go.
Now, the first pitch with WEEI.com's Rob Bradford and John Tomasi.
All right, here we go. Here we go from the Old Dominion Freight Line Studios. Just as a reminder, the first pitch of tonight's game, Game 2 in the World Series, is at 8:09. It'll be around 43 degrees. And tonight's first pitch time and temperature is brought to you by Marcus by Goldman Sachs. Personal loans from Marcus by Goldman Sachs are a financial home run. They have no fees, fixed rates, and even have a reward for paying on time. Learn more at Marcus.com. Here we go, first pitch. And by the way, John, I don't know if you know this. So first pitch is the thing that is getting everybody ready to go for the pregame show, which gets everyone ready to go for the actual game. And this is like I said last night, this is putting you in the car with a cheetah and locking the door, not lowering the heart rate, but heightening the heart rate. And because first pitch is so awesome, this hour leading up to it is so awesome, that we have partnered up with Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is sponsoring first pitch.
It's about time.
There you go. It's a natural partnership. So thank you, Vivid Seats. Thank you for everyone for listening. Like we did last night, we're getting you ready for the game. I thought we did a proper job, much better than any other place you could go leading into a game.
I believe I said that neither pitcher would last five innings. I was correct.
I thought there was some fascinating Manny Machado at bats.
There was Ryan Brazier.
Kind of like, okay, so we're going to pick through a lot of stuff. Like I said, we're going to go all the way up until the pregame show with Mike Mananski. And then obviously Joe, Tim, and Lou for game two. So there's a lot to get through. You sat in on Cora. Did you sit in on Brock Holt? Brock Holt was also at the podium.
No, I was down.
But we did. I don't know if you saw the tweets from what Brock Holt said when asked about the difference between John Farrell and Alex Cora. And he basically said, well, one communicates and the other doesn't.
Yeah, that's sort of been a running theme throughout the year.
But never at a podium before a World Series game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, clearly Cora has a much better personality in terms of dealing with this year's team and dealing with younger players and feeling like he toes that line between being one of them and being their boss, but he does it really well. And that was something he talked about in spring training. I'm not going to apologize for being close to the players. I don't think there's anything wrong with being close to the players. Clearly, he does not have a problem telling guys they're sitting. Brock Holt, you just hit for the cycle, you're out the next day. Eduardo Nunez, you know, you hit, you're out. And so that part of it is fine. I still think it's a little bit like Farrell told guys when they were playing and when they weren't playing, but he was not Mr. Approachable in his office like Cora.
Well,
that's the difference.
He was older. He was, you know, this goes back to when Farrell was let go. We talked about the pros and the cons and why they're doing this. And I'll give them credit. Obviously, they're sitting here one game up, 1-0 in the World Series. So whatever they did worked. Whatever they did was right. And one of the things, and I was saying this to Tom Werner, good for you guys for understanding where baseball is going. I don't always think the ownership had done that. Like, they were chasing their tail a lot, whether it's the 30-year-old pitching thing, whether it's should we take a lot of pitches, shouldn't we take a lot of pitches?
Analytics.
Should we – we're gonna prioritize bats because we're going to go get Hanley and Pablo, and we'll figure out the pitchings elsewhere. You know, they've been chasing their tail about a lot of things. But this year – they actually hit on the things that were important. They understood that the game was changing. They understood in that manager seat that it was important that the manager maybe is a little bit younger, maybe can relate to the players, has to come out into the clubhouse to do that, and that's the way the game is going. I guess. I mean, Dave Roberts, I think, is like that. A.J. Hinch, I think, to a certain extent, is like that. Craig Counsell, to a certain extent, is like that. So, I give them credit. I mean, this isn't saying John Farrell was a bad manager. It was saying that, like Farrell in 2013, right guy at the right time.
Yeah. And part of me thinks that it's a little bit weak to be up here now and saying that Farrell was a terrible communicator and everything. The guy won a World Series. And when you had clubhouse insurrections like you had last year with David Price stuff and Eck and all of that, that was player driven. So I do think there's a little bit of excuse making, like, oh, it was his fault these teams fell short. That said, you said it. Right guy, right time, Alex Cora. There is no arguing that whatsoever.
There's always somewhat of that when, you know, even like we talked about this the other day, Carl Crawford was like, oh, Terry Francona, he really, you know, messed with me. And like, but thank goodness Bobby Valentine is here.
Yeah, the Red Sox have had one terrible manager in the last 15 years, and it was Bobby V. You know, everybody else, Francona won a World Series, Farrell won a World Series, Grady, he got a lot out of that team. Obviously, made one decision that would have haunted him even more if they hadn't won it the next year. Not that that helped him. I take issue with the whole idea that, like, oh, this was all Farrell's fault. Like, I just think that's
no. 93 wins back-to-back years, and that seems to pale in comparison to what they have now. But my guess is that they probably would have won 9,800 wins if you had the same sort of dynamic with the terrible, terrible American League, and they lost division. I mean, I think that it comes back to what we said. Right guy at the right time has done a really good job in Alex Cora. And, you know, I don't think it's inarguable. Good for them for identifying that, much like good for them for identifying John Farrell back in 2013. But you sat in on the aforementioned Alex Cora. What did he say? Anything today? Nothing really?
No.
I heard it was pretty nothing.
Yeah, there was not. There was. I would like to sit here and be like, oh, we got to dig in on this. But no, I mean, the big takeaway from last night for me is just, you know, I think Xander Bogaerts put it best. When he's talking about Cora and the golden touch, the magic touch, he's like, he just needs to do it for three more games. Three more games and everyone goes home happy, because this run he's on is really insane. You know, talking to Ron Renicki after the game, former big league manager himself, asked him, you know, is it supposed to be this easy? He's like, no, it is not supposed to be this easy. But, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into how Cora makes these decisions. He factors in numbers. He factors in matchups. He factors in his gut. He factors in conversations with players. There's a lot that goes into the decision to send Eduardo Nunez up there against Alex Wood. And it's not just it's a righty and a lefty and cross your fingers and hope. There's a lot more to it.
You know, so, you know, I've known Cora since he came to Boston. We're covering him and, you know, kept in touch with him throughout. Been on the podcast like 50,000 times, not since he'd been manager, but
Bradfoe show.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like yesterday we were arguing about the merits of the WBC. And, but, you know, so you know the guy, or you think you know the guy, and then you never know how he's going to act or how he's going to function in the manager's chair. I think looking back now, one thing that I didn't understand about Cora was how smart he was. Like that he's really, really, when it comes to baseball, he's really, really smart. And what I mean by that is that the ability to see this is going to happen two steps down the road. And not a lot of managers can maybe one step down the road, but the ability to see this is going to happen two steps down the road. And, you know, I did something on his memory too. And this is another thing. It factors in. He has this weirdly unbelievable
baseball memory.
A baseball memory, right? You can't find his watch.
Him and Joe Castig, they have baseball memories.
Yes, it's Ian Brown. They all have good baseball memories. But he in this, I think, does factor in, like Veritek used to have this memory. Veritek could identify, oh, this hitter did this 5 years ago. I remember when they were facing this pitcher. So I think that some of the things that we're learning about Cora is coming to the surface now, whereas, you know, like you said, you knew him too. I mean, yeah, he's a smart player, utility player, good personality, blah, blah, blah. Okay, yeah, seems like a good fit. But we didn't know this other stuff about him, the things like last night.
Yeah, and Matt Barnes said it after the game. He was like, exactly what you're saying. People don't understand how smart he is, how well he knows baseball. And it's exactly what you were talking about. And the impact it has, the effect it has, is when Alex Cora summons a reliever in a tough situation or sends up a pinch hitter or starts a lefty against a lefty when you wouldn't expect it, those players are now confident, like, well, he knows what he's doing. Everything he does works. So if he believes in me, I believe in me. And Renicki said that as well last night, that it sort of becomes this self-feeding thing where the manager makes decisions. You see that they work. When he makes one involving you, you're more likely to buy in just because the track record.
And we go back to the beginning of the year. Remember that first game? I did Red Sox Review that night. And it was the wave of calls. Cora, the game's too fast for Cora.
Yep.
He can't manage a bullpen.
Even though he went to his eighth inning guys and they blew it.
Yeah, I mean, Kelly gave up four runs. And he's like, oh, no, he doesn't know how to manage a bullpen. And then so what does he do? He comes right back with Kelly. This is another thing that we've seen with Cora. We saw it with Brazier in the playoffs. He has the rough outing against the Yankees. He comes right back with Brazier. That's another hallmark of what Cora has done. And so starting in that very first game, we have seen sort of how he's going to do that. And to your point, how he's also going to get these guys to trust that whatever he's doing is right. Miami, okay, Mookie, you hit a home run, you're sitting. Hanley, you hit a home run, you're sitting.
We get no hit. Guys are still getting days off because that's how we had it, you know, planned out.
Exactly. So, and we should mention, I guess we should mention the lineup. And good for us also that lineup, tonight's starting lineup is brought to you by Cintas, a trusted partner of businesses everywhere. Cintas, ready for the work day. And I'm telling you, Cintas picked a great time to sponsor the lineup because there are some conversation items in there, some talking points, as the kids say. Mookie Betts, Andrew Benintendi, Steve Pierce, J.D. Martinez, Xander Bogaerts, no surprise. Now you keep Devers in there, you keep Kinsler in there, Jackie Bradley's back, and Christian Vasquez is once again catching David Price, which when he caught David Price in Houston, that was one of the things I'm like, whoa, what's going on? Yep. Sandy Leon was the guy that got David Price through that run in the second half of the year. This is taking a chance, and the next thing you know, boom, here's David Price pitching a good, really, really good outing against Houston with Christian Vasquez catching.
Yeah, and, you know, that was, like you said, we're sitting there going, is this necessarily the right move? And then it is, because everything Cora touches turns to gold. We keep saying it. The one that I guess surprised me just a little bit was you thought, is there a shot that Nunez would be in there today just because of what he did last night? But
it wasn't like Devers didn't do anything. Like
no. I mean, Devers is on an unprecedented run. Eight straight starts with an RBI to start his postseason career. Nobody's ever done it, I think, at the start of their postseason career, and only like A-Rod and a couple other all-time greats have done it, period, in the history of the playoffs. So you do want him in. The one thing he said, the lefty that he will sit Devers against is Hill because of the spin rate. And this is an interesting conversation to have. It would be difficult to imagine 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, maybe even last year, a manager benching a guy because of spin rate. It is not like the spin rate on Hill's curveball, and so Devers will probably sit against him. But that sort of shows the level of detail that goes into these lineups.
Well, a guy got on the playoff roster because of spin rate.
Yeah.
I mean, this is. I don't think that was happening when Curtis Laskanik was making the 2004 roster.
The mechanic.
Yeah, exactly. But Drew Pomeranz is on this roster in large part because they had been tracking his spin rate, his velocity, and they really, really like what he's doing. By the way, I guess I'm propping up my own story, but Pomeranz, when I was talking to him last night, I found it sort of refreshingly odd that he honestly didn't think he had any chance of being on the roster.
Yeah, and you know, I can back you up on that because I talked to Brandon Workman for a while during the media thing. And he was not sitting there morose like a guy who didn't think he was on the roster. So I think that truly was like a last 12-hour decision by the Red Sox.
Well, so what Pomeranz said, he said, Lavangi had said, hey, be ready, but he really didn't take any stock into it. And he threw this live BP. We saw it out in the field. And Pomeranz said, I wasn't even pitching myself. My job in my head was to be Clayton Kershaw. My job was to pitch exactly like Clayton Kershaw. And he said, you know what? I had a blast doing it. I was throwing cutters. I was drawing back on my curveball. I had so much fun being Clayton Kershaw. And I was going to go to bed that night thinking, wow, I did a great job of emulating Clayton Kershaw. Well, what happens? He has to pick up his parents at the airport. I don't know, 11 or something. He gets a call from Cora about 10 o'clock. Said, hey, you know what? You might be on the roster. And then a few minutes later, he gets a text, you're on the roster. So he picks,
just so don't get drunk with
yeah,
your
he
parents.
Said, he said pick up his parents, and his parents, hey, by the way, welcome to Boston. By the way, I'm on the playoff roster. And they're like, he what? What? So to go back to what you're talking about, you know, this is the reason Pomerantz is on the roster, because they like this spin rate. They were impressed. He said that he was approaching it every single day like he was going to pitch that night. And it's a good lesson for the kids, John.
It's a great lesson for the kids. Can I make two observations?
Yeah.
I want to go back to something you said about Cora, the thing that you didn't realize about him.
That he was smart.
That he's smart. You thought he was dumb. I did not think he was dumb. But I think the aspect of his personality that I didn't realize the way that it would translate to the field here is the cockiness. Like,
yes,
and not,
yes, thank
not the
you.
Cockiness like
no.
You know, like a pro wrestler or something. More just like you know, you ask him a question. I was in here with Dale and Keefe over the summer when he would come in, and you could ask him any question and there'd be something, you know, oh, this guy's struggling, he'd just go, nah. Just like wave his hand with a shake of the head, kinda like almost like he's still a player. He still has that persona like he's a player and he believes, I'm gonna go out there and beat you because I'm better than you. And that good kind of arrogance has definitely spread to the rest of the team, and you can see it in the way they carry themselves.
Yeah, and that's, I think that has served him well when it has come to criticism. Because it's like, yeah, you want to criticize me? That's right. It's your prerogative to be wrong. You know,
yeah.
It's like, I mean, but that's basically how he's taken it every single time. Anyway, 617-779-7937. We're going to take some calls the next segment. We got to take a break right now. I'm Rod Bradford. That's John Tomasi getting you ready. This is First Pitch, getting you ready for the pregame show leading up to Game 2 of the World Series. Be back right after this. All right, we're back here at the Old Dominion Freight Line Studios at Fenway Park, getting you ready for Game 2 of the World Series pregame show at the top of the hour with Mike Mananski. That leads you right up until Joe, Tim and Lou on the call once again. This is the time, if you want to call in, have your voice heard, this is a segment to do it right now. And we're going to start out, and I should mention, 617-779-7937 if you wanted to join that aforementioned conversation. But one person who knew the number and did call in already is Bucky from Melrose. Bucky, how are you?
How you doing, guys? Thanks for letting me be involved in the conversation.
We appreciate it.
When they hired Alex Cora, he came in after John Farrell, you know, was kind of, you know, ended badly. And then Farrell took over when Valentine, which ended very badly. Do you just think it's just a different voice where the players are just like a change of tune? And you think that Cora has the ability to last longer than like 2, 3, 4 years or whatever? With, you know, it just seems like when Fowler came in, he was like a big communicator, and the players liked him. He was a player's kind of guy, and then it just kind of just fell by the wayside. I'd like to have your opinion on that, and I'll hang up and I'll listen.
Yeah, right, thanks for the call, Bucky.
I would say that this is not just a matter of new voice. You know, I think there's more to it than that. And Farrell is a manager from a slightly different time, when there was more of a separation between the manager's office and the clubhouse, and he was more of an authority figure, but not necessarily someone that you would BS with. Cora is much more relatable, just personality-wise. You know, Farrell is a little bit of a stiffer personality, I think is fair to say. And Cora has a much better way with today's kind of players than Farrell did at the end. You know, Farrell's tenure had run its course, which is fine. That's how every manager, I mean, Terry Francona's tenure had run its course a few years earlier. Alex Cora right now is in that window where he's young enough to remember what it was like to have played. He's managing against players that he faced, and he's, you know, far enough removed from the game to have that authority as well.
I think for me, it's pretty cut and dry when you have, and I agree, these things run their course, and that's certainly what happened here. But you go back to when Francona left, they made the mistake and said, we're going to go 180 degrees, which was baffling. It was so bizarre there were some problems, obviously, but it had worked to really a historic level in terms of making the postseason. And so they went 180 degrees, did everything exactly as opposite as you could do it with Bobby Valentine. You had a core group of guys who were saying, wait a second, this isn't what we want. This isn't what we went to the playoffs with. It was an absolute disaster. So what Farrell was the right guy at the right time because he represented a lot of what Francona did, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, how many times did we ask Valentine, are you going to tell the players the night before that they're playing? Because that was like Millsy's big thing with Francona.
Yeah.
And he got so offended when we asked that. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? And then when Farrell came in, yeah, that became part of the equation. We talk about communication. That was John Farrell's communicating with the players. And so for that team in 2013, it's revisionist history to suggest that Farrell was not of the same ilk of like that Cora is right now, that he wasn't the right guy at the right time, because he absolutely was for that group.
Yep.
But that was a different group than this group. You had Victorino, you had Napoli, you had Ross, you had Gomes, you had Ortiz, you had these guys. If you look at that, my guess is that more than half the roster was in the 30s, or
yeah,
at least close to it.
You had like Middlebrooks, Bogarts, and everybody else. How old would – yeah, Pedroia at that point – had just turned 30, right? So
you had Lackey, you had who else? Lester. Lester was a little bit younger. I'm drawing a blank. Well, I mean, Buchholz was around.
You had Koji, who was like 50. Yeah, I mean, yes, it was a veteran roster.
Peavy when he came in. So it wasn't like this roster at all, really.
No, this is all players who are trying to find their way. And you talk about giving ownership credit for identifying the right guy. The one thing that they kept coming back to is we're not getting enough out of our young players. Mookie took a step back. Benintendi, it's kind of unfair to say he took a step back because he hadn't played a ton the year before, but that was the view of him, that he had stepped back. Jackie Bradley. And so they needed somebody who could come in, reach the younger players, just help them relax, help them exhale. That was probably the biggest criticism of Farrell, and it was a fair one. And Cora has come in and changed that.
All right, Robert in the car. Hey, Robert, how you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I'm glad I'm on. Listen, this is the first time I'm calling any time in my life. But anyway, listen, I was watching the game yesterday, and when Matt Barnes was pitching to Bellinger, that was a really fat pitch he threw there. I mean, he was lucky that it was another hitter. I mean, he probably would hit out of the park. But I think the Sox have gotten away with some really fat pitches there, like against Bregman, the last pitch that he threw to that Kimbrough threw to Bregman. That was if he didn't get under him more, it would have been out of Fenway Park.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's how baseball works, Robert. When the ball moves just that little bit, and that's the end result that happens. That's what makes them good pitchers all the time.
And there's nothing wrong with getting a little luck. I mean, everybody gets a little luck along the way.
Yeah. Robert, call back anytime. Thanks for the call. But, you know, you look at – I thought he was going to go with the Rodriguez at bat when Rodriguez came in, because, you know, you look at the way that Dave Roberts managed that, and a lot of people are focusing on bringing Wood in that situation, giving up the home run to Nunez. And I know that this is the way the Dodgers play, but holy mackerel, four pinch hitters. Oh, my goodness. Like, you know, one right after the other. And we talk about Cora, and Cora knows this is happening. Cora, for the most part, was able to stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, part of having Nunez on the bench tonight, he was talking about before the game, is knowing that there are a couple of potential matchup guys that will – work in his favor, and so that's why you keep him out of the starting lineup.
All right, Scott in the car. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, gentlemen?
Good, thanks.
Good, good. So going back to the beginning of the playoffs, the bullpen's a mess, sales a mess. Now, I think everyone had picked New York to beat us. Everyone had picked the Astros to beat us. Does that say more about the competition, or does that say more about Cora and who we are?
All right, thanks for the call, Scott. You can answer that, John.
Yeah, I mean, I think it says, I don't know. So I thought they would beat the Yankees. I thought they would lose to the Astros. I think what it says is we've just underestimated their talent all year. And the one thing that has really separated them from every team they've played in the postseason, right through game one last night, is the ability to take advantage of even the tiniest little misstep by the other team. You know, Freeze misses a pop-up in the first inning. It leads to a run. You have, you know, a misplayed ball down the line, it leads to a run. Throughout the Astros series, you have Correa missing second base on what should have been a double play, leads to runs. It's like every opening you give this team, they go barging through, and that's something they did all year. But, you know, when they get up to 100 wins and they're running away with the division and you kind of stop paying attention, you need to see it in the compacted, you know, time frame of the playoffs to really appreciate it.
Yeah, and you talk about how they got here. And I was on MLB Network Radio with Ryan Spielborgs. Remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Former pitcher. And he was a West Coast guy. He's like, hey, you know what?
Yeah, Rockies, right?
The Dodgers had a much tougher road. I'm like, not really. I mean,
how do you say that?
Well, because he's looking at the rest of the American League, and I told him, listen, the postseason, this is one of the best postseason groupings in the American League that we've seen in a long, long time. And Rick Porcello said this last night, which was once we played and won in Yankee Stadium, that's when we believed. That's when we sort of like, well, Houston, it doesn't matter. And what you get to the World Series, that doesn't matter. For whatever reason, according to him, that was a big moment for them of not only beating the Yankees, but being the Yankees in Yankee Stadium, because they all say the same thing. Houston was fine, their crowd, whatever. The Dodgers, same sort of thing. But they're never going to play in a place like Yankee Stadium was, particularly in that last inning of that last game.
Yeah, and to think of how they won Game 3 there, 16-1, Brock Holt hits for the cycle. They took the crowd out of that game so early. And, you know, they're coming off a bad loss, and you're thinking, all right, you know, the Yankees win two in a row. The series is over. It's a disaster. We spend the offseason saying the Red Sox were frauds, blah, blah, blah. None of that gets to them whatsoever.
All right, 6-1. Oh, I'm sorry, we can't take any more calls because you know what? It's the segment where
we can still give out the number.
We can't. We sure can. You can call tomorrow morning. I encourage that. Kirk and Callahan. I don't know who's on with Jerry and Mutt. But like I said, the reason we can't give out the number because we have designated that last segment leading into the pregame show as the cheetah in the car and locking the door segment.
It's the power quarter hour.
No, it's the we're raising your heart rate to dangerous levels segment. So I'm John Tomasi. That is Rob Bradford.
Sounds good.
That is Patty O'Day behind the glass.
I would like to give John Tomasi a raise.
Oh yeah, you're right. I don't blame you. So we're gonna leave you up until Mike Mananski, the pregame show, and Joe and Tim and Lou. We're gonna take a break right now. Then we're gonna be back for the dangerously high heart rate segment right after this. All right, John Tomasi, we get a few more minutes from the Old Dominion Freight Line studio. People lined up outside Fenway Park. It's cold, but they are warm with anticipation.
Love it. Love it. You wanted me to eye thumbs up.
There you go. So we get a few more minutes here before we have to take off for the pregame show. Mike Mananski on with a cavalcade of stars, including one of us. And so I want to get your take.
You know what? There are two words we have not uttered this
David
entire
Price.
Show.
David Price.
Which it just goes to show how important that Houston start was for him.
So I don't know if you saw the post I put up about the David evolution of David Price.
Yeah.
But did you see the quote from him? Like, I thought that was telling. In case people missed it, which
No chance.
The media day the other day, on Monday, David Price had to sit there for 45 minutes, really toward the beginning of the whole thing. He's asked about what was his feeling like after the morning after that good start in Houston. He's like, I felt like I wanted to wake up and see if my teammates were up so we could get squad wins in Fortnite.
We're back to that.
I'm like, there it is. I mean, this is such a subtle little burn to everybody. Hey, you know what? I've been playing Fortnite, and now I'm going to tell everybody I'm playing Fortnite.
Yeah, and guess what else I'm going to do? I'm going to go out on a cold October night, and I'm going to shove against the Dodgers.
Is he John Tomasi? Is he going to do that?
I am.
Well, were you, first of all, were you right about Sale? No, you weren't right. Oh, yeah, you were.
No, I totally was.
Yeah, you were.
I said he wasn't.
You're one for
it.
One.
Yeah, and Kershaw.
Yeah,
both of them. Neither of them were going to make it through the fifth.
Yeah, normally it'd be like, because this was historic.
Somebody wrote, maybe it was Nightingale, one of the national guys, maybe it was Jason Stark, wrote about how this might be the best pitching matchup in World Series history, and it's like,
Well, it showed, like, it was, I think, of pitchers who had pitched at least 1,000 innings, it was the first time that two guys with under 2 ERA? 3 ERA? Under 3 ERA.
It was probably 2 and a half.
It was a historic matchup, and it was also ended up being historic because you didn't have two pitchers, two starters, both on both sides get taken out after under 5 innings.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, like Kershaw, just to digress for a second here, having not seen Kershaw other than on TV, saw him get the last outs against the Brewers to end that series. You see him in person and you realize, oh, wow, his stuff is nowhere near what it used to be. Like, I kept looking up at the radar gun. It was like, he's Pomerantz. Like, yeah. He's what Pomerantz was earlier in the year. Like, 91, that was,
what a genius.
92.
Pomerantz simulated Kurt
and
then,
maybe
Kershaw.
That's why, but he said it. He had to take a little bit off to simulate.
I had to be a little worse.
Yeah, so Kershaw clearly isn't the guy that he used to be. As for David Price tonight, I'm a believer. I was a big believer in he needs to get the first one. If he gets the first one, he's going to be fine. And just how good he was against the Astros, you saw it almost from the first pitch where it was like he was 87 to 95 in the first inning, and you go, oh, whoa, this is the guy we saw in July, the guy we haven't seen in like a month. I think he's locked in. He's got that one under his belt. I'm feeling good. And the Red Sox can attack this lineup.
Well, okay, so I agree with you, and I come back to that, which is one thing with David Price, one of his biggest problems was that I thought he was petrified of the Yankees lineup. I thought that he looked at the Yankees lineup and he's like, oh man, getting through this is, I don't know, this is tough. I don't think he looked at it the same way with Houston, and he certainly doesn't look at it the same way with this Dodgers lineup. Even with Machado sitting in the middle of the order, I mean, you've had good games against the Baltimore Orioles with Manny Machado sitting in the middle of the order.
Yeah, he's faced Manny Machado since, what, 2011,
yeah, Machado's 2012? Hit like 5 home runs against him. Yeah, you know, But it comes back to what we said about this National League lineup thing. You look at the National League lineup and go, eh, even last night, yeah, you're pinch hitting, you're getting matchups and everything, but are you really worried? Yeah, Matt Kemp hits a home run, but are you like, oh my goodness, I can't have this happen where you face these guys? No, David Price has...
No, the Dodgers are a weird lineup for a team that has, like, it feels like every guy in the order hit between 20 and 25 homers. Outside of Machado, there's nobody that I really fear in that lineup. You know, it's not like you had Bregman. It's not Judge or some of the guys with the Yankees. It feels like these National League teams come into an American League-style game, and they're not ready for the grind. They cannot grind with the Red Sox.
All right, we've done it again. We've gotten people ready for the big game. We've properly prepared everyone. I'm Rob Bradford. That is John Tomasi. Thanks to Patty O'Day behind the glass. Thanks to John Anderson behind the glass. Back in Brighton, Game 2. Mike Minansky up next. Joe, Tim, and Lou on the call. Get ready. Buckle up, John. Game 2 right around the corner. We'll see you tomorrow or the next day.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.